me, Anna D. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. Thanks for being with us live from the Skyline Studios high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. Hey, I'm feeling a lot more rested today on this Monday morning or Monday afternoon, I guess, after the Oscars than I usually am on after an Oscars. It seems like it didn't go very late this year.
It's also because you didn't host 100 people at your house, which is the norm for you, I'm beginning to discover.
Big parties with a big fat Greek and Italian wedding is just sort of like the baseline. Then if you invite friends, it's like a lot more people. So it becomes a big thing, and that's fine. We enjoy having our people and our family around us. But speaking of hosts, G, I have two key takeaways from the Oscars.
Okay,
so here it is. One, I need to go see Parasite.
Listen, that's my people's movie. I'm a very proud Korean-American.
But let me ask you this, because it wasn't really on my radar too much. I mean, I kind of read through the names of the Oscar nominees. I nominated multiple categories, one Best Picture, one in four categories last night. Huge win for this South Korean movie, a first foreign film to claim Best Picture title. What a huge win. I wasn't sure I wanted to go see it, and now I've learned a little more about it, how there's this, it's thrilling movie, and there's this big ending that's
yes.
kind of surprises you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know about it?
I knew
you
about
did.
It, and I went to go see it. I had heard about it on social media, and then also just hearing, I enjoy movies, so I've listened to film critics a lot, so I'd heard that it was on the radar.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of this director and some of the other films that he's done. They're quirky, they're different. You have to be prepared, definitely, to go see a foreign language film. So be sure to be up for reading the subtitles, which I know sounds like silly, but it's fast moving. So, you know, I think you have to be in the mood for that.
Mm-hmm. That I fall into it naturally and it just doesn't even matter anymore. In the beginning, it feels like work and then it
right.
doesn't.
And there's a lot of action in it. So that's also another thing that's going on.
Yeah.
But there's a big surprise ending. But what's beautiful is what it says about social classes and what's happening globally. And I think it's very applicable also in the United States, too. And it was just fantastic. So
I'm going to check into that. The second takeaway I had was we need a host. Okay, we were teased with hosts last night. I don't know if you watched it, but it felt like they were sort of teasing us. They had the Steve Martin and Chris Rock walked up there and were so good. And then Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig were up there and they were so good. And I just was like longing for the days of a host. So I want to get to that piece of it in a moment. Did you miss the host? That's the question. Did you miss one? If you watched even a piece of it, did you see their performance? Pretty incredible. But first, a couple things coming up on the show I want to let you know about. This we just heard about the Chinese members of the Chinese military who were charged. That huge data breach that we knew about now for many months with Equifax. Nearly 150 million people's personal data, financial data taken in that hack. A big deal. I mean, Equifax was partly to blame, and we can go into that later. But on the show today, the researcher who wrote the Senate Intel report on disinformation and hacking by foreign governments. She covered things right after the 2016 election and looked into who was doing what to whom and how it was all being done. She's going to tell us that for 2020, things have gotten a lot more sophisticated and what to expect. So the next couple of months as we lead up to this all-important election, she's got some interesting things to reveal about that. Valentine's Day right around the corner this Friday. Would you give a puppygram? You don't have to drop a dog into someone's home that doesn't want one. This is or wasn't ready to have one. This is more of a temporary solution, and it's a really cool idea from a local shelter. So we'll get to that. Money Monday, talking about money and investment decisions. No matter where you are, what life stage, we're going to break it down by life stage. So if you're starting out, or you feel like you should have started a long while ago, but you couldn't because you're dead or whatever, some ideas from Morningstar. Or if you're midway there or ready to retire soon or already retired, some things you should be thinking about. Plus, our travel expert's going to talk about, as you look out the window and say, oh, okay, or you're outside and you think, wow, it's a little cold in Chicago. Could I? Should I? Maybe I will. A staycation, a deal vacation, and a dream vacation. She's going to break it all down for us.
Anna, you have my entire life and needs covered in this one show. It's going to solve all my problems.
Good. I hope it does. But back to the Oscars just for a minute. Let's hear the little piece of Steve Martin and Chris Rock. I just thought so many people, as soon as they heard this, they were like, oh, make them keep going. We love them to host the Oscars. A lot of people calling for that after they heard them. Producer Jazz, we've got the Steve Martin and Chris Rock moment. There was just a little piece of it we wanted to replay again, which was a really just a cool moment that made me long for the days when you had a host.
You know, I was thinking today, Chris, that we both have hosted the Oscars before, and this is such an incredible demotion. A couple of years ago, there was a big disaster here at the Oscars where they accidentally read out the wrong name, and it was nobody's fault, but they have guaranteed that this will not happen this year because the Academy has switched to the new Iowa Caucus app.
Jeff Bezos is so rich, he got divorced, and he's still the richest man in the world. He saw Marriage Story and thought it was a comedy. Steve, do you have anything you want to add about Mr. Bezos?
No, I like getting my packages on time.
Nice move, Steve Martin. Calling out Jeff Bezos, who seemed to take it pretty well. He was laughing, and they were funny. They just, again, they sort of teased me and reminded me, when you have a great host or great hosts, how awesome it can be. I wanted them to keep going.
I like the two of them together. Why don't they let them do it together, the whole thing?
A lot of people asking about that. We'll also have some sound from Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig. They were super
hilarious,
funny, just so good. And also people calling for them. Why don't they do it next year? A lot of people wondering if they will go hostless. It's been 2 years in a row. What will they do next year? We're going to talk to Alicia Quarles from Daily Mail TV, seen on Channel 9 every day at 3 p.m. And she's going to fill us in on some of the behind-the-scenes stuff going on. And then we're going to get to some of those other topics I discussed earlier coming up on the show here on WGN. Alicia Quarles from Daily Mail TV, she was maybe freaked out a moment or two at the Oscars yesterday. She gets to cover the Oscars and all kinds of fun things like this in the world of entertainment for Daily Mail TV. It airs at 3 p.m. every day on Channel 9. Alicia, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. Do you get to go to the parties at all? Is this a late night for you after the Oscars? I'd imagine it is.
Well, it's always late night. Usually I'm there physically covering, so this is the first year in a while we're at Early Morning Hits. So I stayed in New York. We watched it, reported in from here. But when you're physically there, you're out late. And when you're here in New York reporting, you're up late. So either way, you're tired.
We were talking earlier about how the hostless thing. I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't know if many people are. I guess it ended pretty quickly. I think I was in bed at 10:15, and you know it ended with, it didn't seem to drag on last night, but I did miss the host. We saw Steve Martin and Chris Rock come out, and it was almost like a teaser in my mind because they were so good you wanted them to stay. And then the same thing with Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig. We have a little bit of their performance because what they did, they show up and they're saying, hey, we're showing off our range as actresses because there are a lot of prominent directors in the crowd. And
yes,
then
absolutely.
They decided to show off their singing abilities as well, which pretty cool.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. And one of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over. You've got the look, you've got the look. Sure enough, you'll be cooking in my Adidas. Oh, devil with a blue dress, blue dress, blue dress, devil with a blue dress on Blueberry Hill. Bo, 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 bo. Greta Garbo and Monroe, yeah. Dietrich and Lady in Red.
Alicia. It was just, I mean, they were so good, too. What do you think of this whole hostless idea? What kind of reaction are you hearing?
I think everybody's right, exactly what you're saying. We're done with not having a host. And when you open the show with Steve Martin and Chris Rock, and they're so funny, and you've got Kristen and Maya Rudolph, people are saying, okay, enough already. Let's get some talent up there. Have one of these duos do it. Mm-hmm. The whole hosting thing started after the Kevin Hart controversy, where he had to drop out of being a host and because of homophobic slurs he had said in the past. For them to do it again this year, it's getting kind of old. We want hosts for next year.
Yeah, I do, too. Of 630, I really enjoyed watching the Oscars last night. I thought the entertainment was better than the Grammy Awards. So many amazing musical performances. I did at some point feel like I was watching the Grammys.
I did as well. You know, it's interesting is usually the Oscars is a show that most people love to hate watch. Mm-hmm. You know, people that think that Hollywood's just too liberal and too out there like to watch it. And then other people watch it and say that it's boring. But this year is actually a feel-good Oscars. So many great musical acts. We had Janelle Monáe and Cynthia Erivo. We had that kind of bizarre act by Eminem. Yeah. But at least it got people talking. So, yeah, it was good overall.
Yeah, it was. And I think that maybe took the place of a host in some ways because it kept it moving and it kept it entertaining and you didn't know what was going to happen. Because I think in the past, that is right. The Oscars sort of get that reputation of taking themselves a little too seriously and maybe getting a little preachy sometimes as well. And this year, those musical numbers really kind of broke it up and just made it what I think it's about, which is entertainment.
I agree. And even that moment when Rebel Wilson and James Corden came out in their cat suits, just it wasn't so highbrow this year, and it was fun. And even though it was predictable, we knew who were going to win all the acting categories, it still was the element of surprise and fun in their speeches and some of the performances.
What did you like? Your favorite speech?
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, he swept the awards season, so we knew he was going to give this speech. And of course, at the BAFTA Awards, basically the British Academy Awards, a couple of weeks ago, he made a very important speech about being inclusive, diversity, women in Hollywood. So I thought his speech last night about second chances and, you know, being kind to each other, especially in this temperament that we're in now, political temperament, where everybody's so vitriolic, I thought it was spot on.
Yeah, it was that part, the second chances, when he was just so honest about how I haven't been a good person, basically, in my life, and yet you all said, okay, let's give him a second chance. That part really spoke to me. I'm not sure I understood everything he said. It seemed like he's a little bit of stream of consciousness when he gives a speech like that, but there were moments that were really powerful, really powerful.
There were, and he was reminding us with a little slight nod, he's Hollywood royalty. You know, he put in there a line from his brother, River Phoenix, who, of course, overdosed many, many years ago. So he was reminding you, I come from this stock, you are my people, but it was powerful and it was honest.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, Parasite, I was just saying, it's a movie I've got to go see. I'm thinking a lot of America who watched the Oscars last night or who saw the amount of awards it got, including Best Picture, the first foreign language film ever to win Best Picture last night. A huge night for Parasite.
An absolutely huge night for Parasite. As you said, first foreign language film to win best film. And Parasite, actually, fun fact, is actually two movies in one. You'll find out when you see it.
Oh.
And HBO has bought the U.S. rights, and they're going to put it out in English.
Oh, I would like that. I mean, I think that I was saying before, the subtitles don't bother me if it's a really good film. It's like in the beginning, you're like, oh, gosh, I got to read these. And then it feels like a few minutes in, if it's really good and captivates you, I forget. I forget it. I don't even read
it. This is one of those movies. That's right. This is one of those movies. Once you start, maybe 10 minutes in, you forget that you're reading and you just get caught up in it. And it's an interesting story and cinematography. Like, we're not used to seeing here in the States. So your mind's kind of saying, whoa, what's going on? But it's a great story.
Yeah. 847. The subtitles were easy to read because they were in big print. So you could read and see the action on the
yes.
screen at the same time. I like the big print. I don't want to struggle to have to
Absolutely.
Read it. You know what's,
I hear you.
Alicia, you know what else is interesting? It only grossed $35 million in the U.S. by, you know, just a week ago. I guess this was when they tallied them. But on Rotten Tomatoes, it got a 99% rating. You saw what it did last night. It feels like this movie could be a box office success now because everyone's going to flock and go see it. But the world hasn't really seen it yet.
You're right. So when they initially put the movie out, it had its initial run in theaters, and then it starts winning award shows, so it was redistributed. It's back in theaters. And in fact, you know, at my job today, we do this for a living, a lot of people that hadn't seen it said, oh, we got to go see this. I said, I've been telling you guys for months to go see this movie. It's that good. But this was basically a nod to the filmmakers because, you know, usually the Academy Awards wants to give this honor to a film that's good and big budget. But also, the fact that it wasn't a big-budget movie and people are now going to go see it and make money, it's a win-win for everybody.
9454, so excited. My hold on Parasite of Blu-ray is available for me at my public library today. That was good thinking ahead to try to get that
hold
because I can't imagine you just walk in today that you'd really get it. One final thing here. One of the things I love about Daily Mail TV and what you guys do is you always have the stories behind the scenes and the stuff that no one else has. One of them is who didn't present last night. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle were offered, you guys are reporting, but declined that invitation.
Yes. They were offered, they declined it. So, you know, Harry famously petitioned for his wife to Bob Iger, the president of ABC, to get the voiceover job that she did, contract with them. So the Academy Awards said, why don't you all come or present? And, you know, Meghan wants to be, according to reports, Hollywood royalty. Well, they said it's too soon, Harry and Meghan. Maybe next year they're trying to keep a low profile. So they're just trying to change their image a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's probably not the right moment for them, but they are sort of redoing everything. Alicia Quarles, it's always good to hear from you, and you have so much good information, and I just love connecting with you, so thank you. Thanks for
winning. Thank you so much. Watch Parasite.
I'm going to see it. I'm going to go get it somehow, some way. I think I can download it. Can't we download it? Is it downloadable?
Yes, you can.
All right, going to do that tonight or tomorrow night. Thanks, Alicia.
Okay, bye.
Alicia Quarles, Daily Mail TV. Again, watch it, WGN Channel 9, 3 p.m. weekdays. Much more ahead here, including an alternative gift for Valentine's Day, a way to help your local animal shelter, and also send some love way by way of your honey. Coming up in a moment. Mm-hmm. on WGN. It's Anna DeVlantis. And if you're thinking about maybe, you know, hey, I want to break up my winter. I want to do a vacation, but I want to make sure I'm not spending too much money. And so what do I do? Well, Janine Tornatore has some answers for you. She'll also answer questions for you, too, because she has been travel. She travels for a living, actually. She's part of the OutsideInsider.com. That's where you can find her, the OutsideInsider.com, Janine Tornatore. How are you? Are you fresh back from somewhere fun? I always like to ask the people who travel for a living where they've been last.
I've been traveling a lot, but not necessarily for vacation, so I could use one right now.
Okay. All right, so we're all on the same page here. Good. We wanted to kind of break this up by a staycation, and I was surprised because I asked you just during the break. I said, but it's Valentine's Day weekend. Is it possible that there's still some deals left? Because I know things get jacked up that weekend. And you said yes, so we'll get to staycation, deal vacation, and then dream vacation. But you always have good budget ideas anyway, deals even if it's your dream, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that's great if we start with staycations about being in Chicago is that this is the time of year when we're in our off season. So you can actually stay at some of these great 4 and 5 star properties at a fraction of the price of what you would pay come, you know, later spring and summer. So it's actually a really great time if you don't want to go somewhere and you want to just play hometown tourists to stay here in town. Great places, whether it's the Swiss Hotel, the Peninsula, some of the great Marriott properties. There are lots of great things. So I have some tips on what to really look for if you're thinking staycation.
All right.
So the first thing you want to look for, especially being in a climate like Chicago, is you want to choose your hotel that has the right amenities. So if I'm in a winter destination and I really want to feel like I'm getting away, but I'm staying home, I'm going to choose a hotel that has an indoor pool, a spa, you know, the great things that you want at your hotel. So you don't necessarily have to leave and you can kind of feel like you've escaped. So look for those. Also, I say don't pay for the hotel perks. You know, here in the city of Chicago, it can be pretty expensive to park at some of these hotels. You're talking upwards of $60 a night.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay for those things. You know, you can look for the promotions, you know, sign up for the rewards programs at the hotel so you can get things like free parking, free Wi-Fi, free breakfast. So make sure that you're always, whether you think you're going to stay there one time or 10 times, just sign up for the rewards program so you can get those things for free.
And even if you sign up for those, even if you're not traveling a lot and you haven't accrued a lot of points, can you still get some kinds of benefits?
You can. So you'll get those things free, like the free Wi-Fi, many. The free gym, you know, sometimes free breakfast comes with it. The other thing to think about, too, is even if you're not the business traveler, it doesn't mean that you can't accrue enough points to use them, because nowadays you don't have to have enough for an entire hotel stay. You can actually pay for your hotel stay partly with cash and partly with points.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're traveling, think about that, because even if you stay 4 or 5 times at, you know, the same brand of hotel, you might have enough to use them to at least pay partially for something.
I do always feel that way because I don't travel for business really. And so I'm like, oh, I don't know. Am I going to sign up for the rewards program? I'll never get enough that is going to mean anything. But you say no, there are some automatic perks and maybe even some that kind of can help out with the price.
Absolutely. And these rewards programs don't cost you anything to sign up. You know, they want, you know, you to become a member. So there's no hassle in signing up for them. I also say this time of year, especially in Chicago, look for the weekend promotions. So when you go to a hotel website, click on the offers tabs or the deals tab, because a lot of them, we're a big business travel city. So all the business travelers come in during the week. When they leave on a Friday, a lot of these hotels, especially down in the area of the Loop, they kind of empty out. So the hotels want to keep bringing people in, bringing the leisure travelers in on the weekends. So you will see those great weekend promotions, things like bed and breakfast. Sometimes over the Valentine's Day weekend, a lot of them have things like champagne and in your room, strawberries, all of those little things that kind of add the extra touch.
Oh, yeah. Kind of make it a little extra special.
Yes.
I have noticed a lot of spa a type of that they're a little cheaper right now at the downtown hotels in Chicago. I've gotten some promotions kind of pushed to my email about them, and they seem a lot lower than they normally are for a massage or whatever you want to do. Those are also down at this time of year.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Everything when you're in the off season can be a bargain. And some of those weekend promotions include things like spa credits. So make sure that you're looking for those, because you're going to want to do all those extra things, especially on a staycation. And a couple other real quick things on the kind of staycation. It's not all about your hotel. So actually, starting on February 13th is a theater week in Chicago. So you can get some of those discounted tickets to some of the great shows that are in town if you're thinking about something this weekend. And if you're not coming during during theater week, you know, and you want to make that staycation, you can go stand by at a lot of the shows. You know, go in day of, see if they have any seats still available, and you can get really great deals doing that. And then I also say playing hometown tourists, or even just looking for kind of that Valentine's Day, you know, gift that's different than just a box of chocolates. Mm-hmm. There are so many really cool tours and different ways to experience the city. You can go on all of these different travel sites. You can even go on Marriott.com, and they have hundreds of different activities in town. And from $30 to $60, you can do things like taking the underground donut tour of Chicago, or all these different ways and different things you probably haven't experienced here in town. So look at doing something of those. They actually make a really great Valentine's Day gift.
Is that real? The one you just said, the underground donut tour?
It's called the underground donut tour.
Oh, I had no idea that existed. I'd like to do the chocolate tour if there is one. And I think there is. I'm going to Google that because I would like to check that out. I was reminded on Friday from our listeners of how many great chocolate makers are still in existence in the Chicago area. So when people are thinking about Valentine's Day, that, you know, kind of support the local stuff.
Absolutely.
Because it's great. All right, let's get to deal vacation. So someone's saying, hey, I want to get away, but I want a deal. Where are the deals right now?
Well, here's the thing. We're starting to get close to spring break season. So if you want to go before all those spring breakers hit some of these destinations, you need to go, you know, between now and I would say early to mid-March to really get a deal in some of these places. I love Southern California. I feel like everyone right now is looking for a little bit of warmth and sunshine.
Sure.
And I think you can't go wrong. I was looking at rates, and even as you get into the spring break season, places like San Diego still can be a pretty good deal this time of year. I'm finding flights in March from Chicago to San Diego from $180 round trip. And that's on some of the major carriers, you know, not some of the low cost carriers where you're paying for your bags and every other thing. But I just think, you know, San Diego's all around great, whether you're doing a friends trip or couples or family. There's so much going on there. You know, for families, I've taken my kids to the USS Midway, which is the great kind of aircraft carrier. We've done the San Diego Zoo. We've done Legoland, the great beaches there. I mean, there's so much going on for families. And then, you know, if you want to go with your couple of your friends, you can hit so many of the cool little beach towns right along there, kind of those little surfer communities. Head over to Coronado Island, ride bikes around. There's great nightlife, great restaurants, hotels from $140 a night.
Gee.
So again, to me, if I'm looking for that warm weather getaway and I don't want to spend a lot and I don't want to go that far, I think Southern California is a really good bet this time of year. It's definitely more affordable than what I'm seeing in Florida right now.
How much are airfares right now? In general, are you seeing any deals, any places, any destinations that you had mentioned from Chicago?
Yeah, well, airfares are actually pretty good right now. In January, they're fantastic. We're still seeing really good airfare deals into February, even to places like Hawaii. One of the things about Hawaii heading into 2020 is that Southwest Airlines is at a lot more flights and routes there. So it's actually, it's not just keeping airfare down for them, but it's keeping airfare down with the bigger carriers as well. So if you look at where there more competition comes in, that's really what keeps the airfare low. So Hawaii is actually a pretty good deal right now. It tends to go up when we get further into the spring break timeframe. But if you can catch one of those nonstop flights on United, for example, you can get there in 8 hours, which isn't too bad for Hawaii,
no,
and enjoy a nice getaway before the hotel rates start to really go
up. That's a good thing to know, because that's a big piece of it. The airfare when you're going to Hawaii is a big piece of the budget, right? You just sort of, it's not cheap when you get there, but you know, you spend a lot on the front end just sort of getting there. So good to know. Dream vacation. Let's make sure we get to that one. So where would you suggest? Where are the deals when it comes to those big, cool vacations?
Yeah, so a couple of really big ones that I think as we get further into our spring, they get a little bit cheaper is New Zealand and Australia. They're in their summer right now through the end of kind of February into March. But then we head into their fall, our spring, as we get further into March and April. So if you want to take something, you know, plan it out a couple of months, I mean, you cannot go wrong with Australia and New Zealand. There's just beautiful outdoor activities there. New Zealand has the mountains and the beaches. So those are big ones. But I also love, in as we get into the spring season, so many great European destinations. Barcelona, I found airfares in March there from $650, which in come summer will be double that. You'll be paying $1,200 to get to somewhere like Barcelona. But you have to think about spring's the shoulder season and a lot of these great European destinations. So travel prices are nearly half of what they are during summer. And you don't have to limit yourself to just one city. And with the high-speed train system around Europe, Europe, you could hit two or three cities in, you know, 7 to 10 days. So if you have the flexibility, this is really the time of year in March and April. If you think, you know, I'm going to be paying $800 a ticket to go to Florida, or I could be paying less than that to go to Europe, kind of have to weigh the difference.
Time to go, then. Yes. It sounds like. I also heard, because of what's going on in China, that the Chinese are not traveling for obvious reasons, but that the places that they normally go have come down, like London and other places. Yes. In Europe, those are a lot cheaper than they normally would be.
Absolutely. It's just that whole matter of supply and demand. So when there's more hotel rooms available in those cities, when you don't have the tourists coming from somewhere else, they're going to be even better, an even better bargain for you.
All right, Janine Tornatore. Where do we find you again, Janine?
Sure. My website is theoutsideinsider.com, and you can find me at the same place on Instagram.
Good. And your Instagram is the outside insider. Just exactly
try to
the
keep
same.
It all the same.
Thanks, Janine. Good seeing you.
My
Thanks
pleasure.
For the tips. More to come here on WGN Radio at 1:43, including Valentine's Day right around the corner. Would you give a puppygram? You don't have to give a dog to someone who may not be ready for one or may not want one, but this is sort of a temporary thing, and it's a great idea from a local shelter. They're going to break it down for us and tell us what they're doing. It's a good cause and a really cool thing coming up here on the show. It's Anna, it's WGN, and it's 1:46 on this Monday afternoon. So Valentine's Day is a week away. A couple of Valentine's-related stories and our special guest who's here in studio. Four couples took their love to new heights over the weekend, exchanging their wedding vows at the sky deck of the Willis Tower. How about that? Love on the Ledge, it's called. And so they offer this to people who win that Valentine's Day contest. It happened yesterday. So that was pretty cool. To date, by the way, 1,000 known marriage proposals, 116 weddings, 18 vow renewals on that ledge. Very cool. White Castle is again offering reservations for its extra Valentine's Day dinner. It's extravaganza. They do this every year, and it's very well attended. 30,000 people will go to White Castle in 13 states. For Valentine's Day. And now, guess what? You can book on Open Table. So you got that opportunity. Don't have a Valentine's, but got an ex? If you have an ex that you want to do something for, I know that seems weird, but when you hear this, it might make more sense. Brookfield Zoo has an idea for you. You can now name a cockroach after your ex for Valentine's Day. And then you just give them a $15 donation. They name a cockroach after your ex. You can even use a nickname if you want. I don't think that they'll complain. And that's available for you, and it's a good way to make some, you know, money for the zoo, bring some money their way. That's pretty cool. We want to talk about another good cause here in studio. One Tale at a Time is the organization. Kara Schwalbach is her name. I hope I got that.
You got it right.
Pretty close. Thank you. I'm glad I did. And you're doing something really cool for Valentine's Day. What is it? And it's almost sold out, too, by the way. But when we talked to you a couple days ago, you were just starting it, and now boom, tell us about it.
Yeah, well, this year is our fourth year offering this program, and it's our annual Valentine's Day Puppygrams. So, of course, we have so many wonderful puppies and dogs and senior dogs in our adoption program. So it's a chance for us to get out, visit some Valentines in return for a donation, raise awareness to all the amazing pets that are looking for homes and shelters and rescues, and also raise funds to save more lives.
Well, what happens here? If you get a puppygram, the puppy shows up at your house?
House or work. We have a lot of folks who order them for their Valentines at the workplace, and a lot of companies that also order them for their entire teams. Instead of throwing that big Valentine's Day party with cookies, they have puppies instead.
And they spend some time with you there. If your boss allows, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
Not every workplace is dog friendly, but some might make an excuse for this sort of thing or make a exception.
Yeah.
In this, does that happen?
Sometimes, but in that case, the Valentine will usually come downstairs, bring their friends, and we'll hang out in the lobby of their building.
Oh.
But most of the time, you know, in celebration of the holiday, they'll make the exception and let our puppies in.
Yeah.
They're so tiny.
They're adorable. Who wouldn't want to see a puppy for Valentine's Day? Can they deliver a card and some roses and chocolate, too, if you wanted to throw that together?
Sure. If they wanted to bring something by our adoption center, extra special, we've done that before. But each puppygram does also come with our 2020 calendar and a card. And when you're making your donation online, you can write a personalized message that we'll include from our dogs on your card for your Valentine.
So cool. So this has been so successful that you're thinking about doing senior grams because you're running out of puppies in order to make all the deliveries, which is a great thing and shows that you're doing a great thing at One Tale at a Time. So maybe the senior grams will open up?
Yeah, we're thinking this afternoon. We only have 2 puppy gram spots left.
Oh,
so if you're listening and you're thinking about getting a puppy gram for your Valentine, it's time. Don't wait any longer. But after we sell out, we are going to be launching senior grams so that we can raise awareness and funds for our senior pals with the gray muzzles. We love our senior dogs at One Tale at a Time. time, and they love us. So we want to raise awareness and funds for these guys.
You actually have a senior, just a loving, looks like a lab mix here with you. See, one of the adoptable dogs.
Yep.
Tell me about this doggy.
This is Jake. He's between 7 and 8 years old, possibly. We have no way of knowing for sure, but he tells us he's between 7 and 8 years old. He's just a gentleman. He's a volunteer favorite right now at our center, and he's been in our care for a few weeks, and actually next week we're rescuing his brother as well from a partner shelter in Arkansas.
How great is that?
Yeah.
So you do have senior dogs. You have all kinds of dogs.
Yep.
And cats as well, or you just deal with dogs?
Yeah, you know, a few years ago we started a program to focus on kittens as well because they're some of the most vulnerable animals in our city shelters. So we have our dog program and our neonate baby kitten program and mama cat program as well.
And you're located again?
Our adoption center is in Bucktown, so pretty close.
Very close. And then if people want to get in touch with you because they want to adopt or they want to participate in the Puppygram or the Seniorgram program, how do they go about doing that, Kara?
Well, go to our website. You can also, if it's not your year to send a Puppygram, come volunteer or foster with us or just visit us at the adoption center.
That is so cool. How did you come up with this whole idea?
We just had the idea 4 years ago, and we had one puppy at the time. So myself and one volunteer started driving around offering Puppygrams, and it just took off from there. So this year we have a whole litter and about 20 different volunteers helping out.
So you're spreading the love, and you're raising awareness for the shelter, and it's such a cool program, and I just appreciate you coming in to share it.
Thank you.
With our listeners. I hope they take part or at least learn a little more about what you do, and maybe they can offer to help in some small way or
thank
big
you.
Way, as the case may be. Kara Schwalbeck, it's Puppygram, and the website is, one more time,
onetail.org/puppygram.
All right, you can find it there. Thank you, Kara.
Thanks.
Good to see you. And I want to mention 630, you're missing the best part about the cockroach at Brookfield Zoo. After you name it, after your ex, they feed it to a monkey. Oh boy. I didn't realize that part of it. So it is kind of special in that way. If that's what you want to do, that's there for you. And again, you're giving to a good cause while you're maybe getting some of that out of your system. I want to briefly here, just we have a couple minutes here before we needed to break. And I want to talk about Chinatown because I was talking to some friends over the weekend who live near there and said that people are not going to Chinatown and that small businesses are really suffering as a result of what's happening overseas. And Chinatown wants to let you know that they are open for business. Fears about what's happening in China have greatly impacted their business. And so we have here with us to tell us a little more what's happening and to remind you that if you feel so inclined to get over there and help out the small businesses that in their community. ZJ Tong, the president of Chicago Chinese Cultural Institute, joining us right now. Thank you, ZJ. Appreciate your time. What can you tell us about what's happening there in Chinatown?
Thanks, Anna. So I walked around Chinatown last night, actually, and saw Chinatown was relatively deserted. Only a couple of restaurants have more customers, but many of my personal favorite restaurants that I know that I always have to wait in line to get into are not that busy. So they're definitely being affected by the current coronavirus scare within the city.
Yeah, and I think you'd mentioned that one restaurant owner you know said his business was down by 60% to 70%. That's got to really, it's got to really hurt the people who are sort of doing this. And it feels as if there's really no reason not to go there and go to the stores, go to the restaurants, and kind of help these people out right now.
Yeah, I talked to another business, a chef of another restaurant. They said their business, it's a new restaurant, they opened for about 2 months, and their business has been affected for over 50%. I think one thing we wanted to really let everybody know is there are only 12 cases of confirmed infection here in the U.S. and only 2 cases in Chicago. But there is no story or no report for those 2 infected persons being in Chinatown. And there are so many good restaurants, and particularly new restaurants in Chinatown, that they're so good. And I really hope that more people will come and enjoy them.
Yeah, I think that's the message you really want to say, is that people do enjoy going to Chinatown and no reason not to go now. But when you see that kind of a decrease, it's alarming. So you're letting people know, don't let the scare of what's happening over there, which is disconnected from Chinatown, stop you from enjoying what it has to offer. How about all the celebrations for the new year, ZJ? Did you see a major decrease there, or because that's such a spectacular event, did people still come out for it?
You know, I've talked to some of my friends, personal friends, both Chinese and non-Chinese, and many of them, it did not deter them to come to Chinatown, but I do have people saying that, oh, we're not going to Chinatown because of the fear. I just want to let everybody know that it's a fear that is based not on facts, but on perception. I think right now there's so much being played out on the media that people think that it's a big issue. But here in Chicago, in Chinatown, it's very safe, and people can really enjoy themselves. And we are still, last night was actually the Lantern Festival celebration among Chinese, and there are still a lot of people coming out enjoying themselves. They should be coming out to enjoy themselves.
Yeah, they should be. And we've had doctor after doctor come on the show and say, hey, you have more exposure to the flu. You could be sitting at any restaurant anywhere across the Chicago area, and the person next to you is sneezing, and they have the flu, and you don't think twice about it. So let's you know, it's an important message, and so I'm happy you joined us, CJ.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that this happened during the Chinese New Year celebration period. Mm-hmm. You know, really, don't single Chinatown out because of this fear of this virus from China. If we have this fear, then we should just stay home and not doing anything. But really, there is so much in life and in Chinatown that we can offer that we're hoping that everybody will come out and come back and enjoy themselves.
An important message. Thank you, ZJ. ZJ Tong.
Thank you, Anna.
He is the president of the Chicago Chinese Cultural Institute. Appreciate that message. We're going to have much more ahead here on WGN. It's 1:57. It's Money Monday here on WGN. It's Anna DeVlantis. 2:06 is the time, and we're talking about retirement and investments, no matter where you are, what stage of life. And this is the cool thing, because I think sometimes you tune it out when you hear, oh my gosh, I got to have a portfolio worth that in order to invest there, or I don't even want to look at it. I'm not where I need to be. Well, we're breaking it down very simply for you. And with us here is Christine Benz from Chicago-based Morningstar. Christine, thanks for being here.
Anna, it's my pleasure.
Tell us what Morningstar is. I know I've used you over the years, including when I first came out of college and then revisited your service over the years and loved using it. But tell us what it is for people not that familiar with it.
We're an investment research firm, so we have research on mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, individual stocks, all types of investments. And then we also have a lot of general financial planning and retirement planning knowledge, and much of it is free to consumers.
So you can go in, you can look up specific stocks, specific funds, you can get your knowledge of the columns that you write about retirement and savings and investments and all that kind of thing. All this knowledge, and it's independent, right?
Exactly. We are objective. We don't have a vested interest in whether you do your business with Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity. Our idea is to help investors do their homework and find the right investments for them.
And it can really pay off. So let's get to it. We want to talk about retirement, no matter where you are in your life, starting out. Okay, starting out, and starting out can be at different ages, because some
right.
people want to pay off their student debt, and I don't know if you advise that first, but before they start investing for retirement. But if you're starting out, Christine, what are some ideas? What are some tips for people?
Well, I think the fact of life is more and more folks at this life stage will be multitasking. So they may well be coming out of college with some sort of student loan, but they need to multitask rather than just trying to pay that student loan down before they get started investing. Because the fact is, if you can get started investing, even at pretty small sums monthly, that can be so impactful in terms of the compounding that you enjoy on that money over your lifetime. So just get started, even if it's starting small, while you simultaneously are paying down any debt that you have and simultaneously also building some kind of an emergency cushion. So something like 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses in really safe investments. You're not putting that money in stocks. You're keeping it in low returning investments. And the beauty of having that cushion is that you're not needing to resort to unattractive forms of financing if you find yourself in a financial crunch. So if you're out of a job or if your pet has some expensive healthcare costs, you're not needing to put them on a credit card.
It'd be overwhelming. going because you start thinking, I just gotta get rid of this debt. I gotta get rid of this debt or with student loans, whatever it is. But even putting away $50, $100 a month, a paycheck, whatever you can figure out a way to do compounds over time. And that's really what makes a difference rather than starting later in life.
It does. So an example would be, say someone could put away $200 a month at age 22 and do that until they are 65. Assuming that they have a very modest, like 5% return on their money, they'd have about $365,000 at the end of that period.
Wow.
If they waited to age 35, even if they earned a higher return, they would not have as much at the end of the time period. So really getting started is crucial. Another thing to keep in mind is if you are employed and you have a 401k plan or some sort of a company-sponsored savings program, a lot of times you're eligible for matching contributions. So that's money that you need to take advantage of no matter what. That's free money.
Free money.
Absolutely. So be sure to take advantage of that, but potentially do more than that if you possibly can.
Okay. So this is a statistic I found, and it's people are not starting out on time. 29% of Americans age 55 and older have nothing saved for retirement. That means no 401k, no IRA, no pension. They're going to rely on nothing but Social Security, which is tough to do. And obviously, you would say what to those people if you're in that boat where you're later in life, maybe not even 55, but in your 40s or whatever, and you really haven't saved, what would you say to do?
It's a tough position, and it's an unfortunate fact that we have kind of a bifurcated retirement system here in the U.S., where about half of workers do not have any sort of company-sponsored retirement plan at all. And smaller employers often field higher-cost 401k plans. But for people who are in this situation of hurtling toward retirement age without any retirement assets, your best bet, if you possibly can, is to continue working as long as you possibly can. And the big payoff of continuing to work, which of course some people may not be able to do, but if you can do it, if you can delay Social Security filing even a year or two past what's called your full retirement age, that's so impactful in terms of delivering a higher lifetime benefit. So that's one avenue that's open to you at that life stage. If you are in a position to make additional contributions, you can take advantage of what are called catch-up contributions, so higher contributions that are available to people who are past age 50. That's another thing to think about.
Okay, let's go to midway there. You've got several years ahead of you to work. You're in that situation, that boat. What advice do you give, Christine?
So peak earnings years, kind of the 40s and 50s, when people are often seeing the highest paychecks of their careers, this is an area to really watch out for lifestyle creep, because there can be this tendency, the more money you're making, the more ways you'll find to spend it. And suddenly you have a dog walker and someone who cleans your house, and maybe you have 10 different TV channel subscriptions. So really keep an eye on lifestyle creep, keep an eye on dining out, keep an eye on your total costs, and try to take advantage of additional ways to fund retirement. So you may be able to do catch-up contributions post age 50. You may also want to augment the tax-sheltered retirement accounts, whether IRAs or 401ks, with non-tax-sheltered accounts. So just save in a plain old taxable brokerage account if you're a super saver who's in a position to save more.
Okay. We want to get to Ready to Retire and Already Retired. Ready to Retire, what advice do you have for that group, the people in that life stage?
Take a close look at your retirement savings to date. A key thing to think about is what's called the 4% rule for retirement portfolio withdrawals. And the basic idea is if you take out 4% of your first year in retirement and use that to augment what you're getting from Social Security or pension, just see if that's a livable amount for you.
So whatever you have saved, you figure out 4%, and that's what you get to live on so that you don't eat into principal, assuming that you're going to keep things in low-risk investments.
Right. It depends on the market environment, of course, but the idea is that you are trying to live on 4% of your portfolio balance in year one. So say you have $1 million, to make it very simple. That would be a $40,000 withdrawal in year one of retirement. Then you could give yourself a little raise for inflation as the years go by. If you look at that number and say that there's no way that that's livable for me, then it's time to go back to the drawing board and think about how you can turbocharge your retirement savings because you have more work to do.
Okay, already retired. Do you give any advice then, or are you sort of like, okay, that's it, you got what you got?
Well, I think you do want to be checking on your withdrawal rate on an ongoing basis to make sure you're not taking too much. Another key point I would make to people at this life stage is we've had such tremendous returns from the stock market for so long, and it's easy to grow complacent, right? You see your equities, you see your stocks performing really, really well. It's tempting to just leave well enough alone. But what I would say is, if you are a retiree and you've enjoyed great returns on your equity holdings, consider paring them back and putting some money into the safer stuff, into bonds, into cash. And the benefit is that if we do encounter a rough market environment, you'll be able to draw upon those safe securities rather than needing to tap your stock investments when they're potentially in a trough.
All right. This is Christine Benz with Morningstar with advice for you on investments and retiring. She's also going to tell us, can you tell us about some common mistakes you see as well, Christine? And we're going to pause here for a minute. But there are a number of those, what people are doing with investments and savings and IRAs. And then also the $0 trades and 0% index funds. It seems like it's really cheap all of a sudden to invest, but is it what you need to watch out for? Christine will also break down some of that for you coming up here. And thank you for your text. She'll take your calls to 215 here on WGN Radio. Christine Benz of Morningstar is here. You've been breaking down what to do at every life stage for investments and savings. Some good tips, some things to think about. 260. I had $15 taken out of my paycheck every 2 weeks for 30 years. And when I retired, I had a nice $24,000 balance to have fun with. Shows you how what you were just talking about, that compounding ability. And it worked for her. It worked for this listener. Just tell your listeners to get in a habit and they will never miss it.
That's right. That's right. Having it automatically deducted from a paycheck is a beautiful way to
never
invest.
Never see it. Can't spend it.
Exactly.
It is. So, top mistakes we make, because I know this is one of your columns that I read when it comes to retirement accounts, IRAs, and savings. People, what mistakes are you seeing, Christine?
Well, this is IRA season, so a lot of people are figuring their taxes and might find that they have some extra money to invest. So one of the key things we see people do with their retirement accounts, especially IRAs, is that they put the money in, but then they don't get it invested in anything. It's just sitting in the cash account where, of course, it earns like close to zero today. So making sure that you get that money invested, I think, is a huge step to take, because over time, having the money invested in the market will really start working for you. So that's one mistake, where people just put the money in but let it lie fallow in something without much of a return attached to it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. We have an 815 question for you. I have a private Roth IRA and was told 4 years ago that the laws had changed. I could no longer invest $50 at a time. I'd have to come up with like $5,000 before I could invest again. Is that true with a Roth IRA? Do they have some kind of limits for you?
It might depend on the provider. So I would definitely shop around to find a company that will accommodate the way that you invest. The fact is, if you're putting money in an IRA, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't automate those contributions, make monthly contributions to it versus having this heavy lift, you know, at the end of the year, right before April 15th. Why not just put fixed amounts in at regular intervals? So shop around for a firm that will accommodate your smaller contributions.
Okay, that's good. That's good advice. And then you also have this column about faux retirement.
Yes.
You call it faux retirement.
Right.
And I loved it because you kind of gave yourself a little sampling of what it might be like, which could be healthy. Not everyone can do it, but it was pretty cool what you found out.
It was a fun experiment. So at Morningstar, we have what's called a sabbatical. Every 4 years, we can take 6 weeks off with no specific agenda. And so in my case, my husband and I did a little bit of traveling, but then I was just kind of home for 4 weeks. And it was summertime, and it was just an interesting experiment in terms of thinking about how I would fill my days were I actually retired. I found that I really did miss my work family quite a bit, and I think that's a common feature of people who do retire from work. They miss their close colleagues. I also miss that sense of purpose that I have with my work on a day-to-day basis. I enjoyed my long walks and going to the library and cooking great dinners, but I really did miss the fact that work gives me sense of purpose. And so one takeaway for me, and I think this is kind of something that we're seeing in the research, is that people, when they're retired, should have that sense of purpose, that thing that they get up in the morning for. Make sure that you have that before you retire.
So those are things, it gave you an idea of what the kinds of things that you would need to think about that you may not, you might think before retirement, oh, wow, of course, as soon as I retire, it's going to be great. I don't do anything. I get up whenever I want. So I don't have to deal with the work environment and the stresses that come along with some jobs, a lot of jobs. But, you know, you're like, wait a minute, I miss some of that. So it's a great preparation, a great reminder.
Exactly. I also examined my spending trends, which was interesting.
How did you spend them when you were not working? More.
There are more spending opportunities. Yes. I'll say that, because you're out and about. But on the other hand, you find like some of the things that I personally enjoy most are free or next to free. So like something like walking to the library, free activity, right? And that's something that I really love. And so I found that there were ways to spend my time that were really pretty cost efficient.
Oh, that's cool. That is really, you have to, can people read that at Morningstar.com?
They can read it on Morningstar.com.
Faux-tirement.
Right.
And it's Christine Benz. She, by the way, is Director of Personal Finance, author of 30-Minute Money Solutions, a step-by-step guide to managing your finances. And you also work with all kinds of Morningstar. You know, we talked about this just a moment ago. With the $0 trades being offered on so many trading platforms now, it seems they're all kind of racing to match each other. And then you hear about 0% funds. You don't have to cost, it doesn't cost anything to invest. Now, certainly we all look for lower cost ones because the larger ones take a bigger piece of your money and aren't always worth it. But zero, is that possible, Christine?
Well, there are 0% index funds. Fidelity broke through that barrier, and we've seen other firms follow suit with index funds and exchange-traded funds that literally are charging 0% expense ratios. A couple of things to think about with this, though, is that these firms aren't in business to serve you out of the goodness of their hearts. They're banking that they will make money on you in some other fashion. So think through your transactions with them. Oftentimes with firms, what we've seen is that the cash accounts that they offer their clients side by side with their brokerage accounts, those may have higher fees attached to them. They may have lower yields because of those higher fees. So do your homework on where you are paying the firm, because free truly isn't free.
And Morningstar would be a good place to do that. There are lots of opportunities out there, but Morningstar is one that will tell you how much the fees are.
Oh, absolutely. Because all of our research points to that being so impactful in terms of the returns that investors are ultimately able to earn on their funds.
309. I'm retired 2 years now. I sleep until noon. Every day is a Saturday. See, that's how I envision it. Like, you know what? I'm just going to sleep. I'm going to hang out, make a coffee, hang out. But you're right. You miss some of that work thing. I mean, a lot of people would. And then we have also, I saved $75 out of my paycheck for years and years and years. And then I had enough to buy a house in Park Ridge when I retired.
I love it.
See, these are the concepts you're talking about, Christine. I want to get to this before we run out of time. The market back at highs, we're seeing big numbers on Wall Street, a lot of money coming in internationally, even into America, and it feels as if things are just going so well. Is this a time to get into the market? Is this a time to keep investing in the market? I guess it depends on where you are in life again, but how confident are you about what's going on?
I think, as you said, Anna, it does absolutely trace back to where you are in life. So I always say, if you have at least a 10-year time horizon, stocks are a good place to be, because over a variety of 10-year periods in market history, stocks have been extraordinarily reliable. But if you have a shorter time horizon, a shorter spending horizon than that, you need to be in safer investments. Mm-hmm. So once you move into like 3-year periods or 5-year periods, stocks are way too volatile for a spending horizon that short. So you need cash, low returns and all. You need bonds, low yields and all. You need the safe stuff, because you have a higher probability of at least holding steady with your money over those shorter time horizons.
815, Christine, how do you feel about self-directed IRAs?
Well, that's a different subsection of IRAs. Sometimes there are some arcane investment types that are bundled under that self-directed IRA heading. My bias overall is for investors to keep their portfolios really quite vanilla, mm-hmm, and low cost. So you're focusing on low cost market tracking. Index funds is a great way to manage a portfolio. I'm not a big fan of some of the more arcane investment types for retirement retirement portfolios. If you do hold them, you'd want them to be a fairly small portion of the overall pie.
All right, Christine, I mean, we're getting a lot of texts and a lot of questions for you, but we are out of time. I hope you will come back and visit us again. I know you've written extensively on the issues of investments and savings, and you make it all so understandable.
Well, thank you.
Which is so important to me, because I'll sometimes get lost in those when these financial people talk, but not you. Christine Benz is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance, author of The 30-Minute Money Solution, Step-by-Step Guide to Managing Your Finances. And also, there's the Morningstar Guide to Mutual Funds. Is that available for everybody?
It is. It's our first book that we did at Morningstar, and it assesses how to pick a mutual fund, which is an important thing if you're putting together a portfolio.
Yes, it definitely is. Thank you, Christine, so
much
for all the advice and help. We appreciate it. 226 here on WGN. Much more ahead. Thank you, Dave. 232, it's Anna D. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. Fake news, we're talking about that because it kind of hit my radar screen. I think around the time of the 2016 presidential election, I started hearing it more and more. You heard the president say it. You heard Hillary Clinton say it. You saw just people were talking about how it's out there. There's so much disinformation and how it was easily masked in places on social media so that you didn't really know where it was coming from. Well, our next guest is here to explain where it was and how far we've come, how much more sophisticated things have become. Renee D'Aresta is the head of policy for the nonprofit Data for Democracy. She's with Stanford University's Internet Observatory, and she co-wrote the Senate Intel report on disinformation after the last presidential election. Renee, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
So things have, I'm going to guess, have become a lot more sophisticated since 2016, and you're on top of these kinds of things. What are you seeing now in terms of where we were then, a couple years ago, 2016, and then where we are today?
Sure. So in 2016, the obvious activity that happened in our election was mostly run out of Russia, out of an entity called the Internet Research Agency. Sometimes it's called the Troll Farm. It's a little bit like a social media marketing company that created a whole lot of fake Facebook pages, a lot of fake Twitter accounts, and fake YouTube channels, and ran a multi-year propaganda and influence operation targeting all different segments of American society. And during that election as well, there was another actor that was in the mix, which was the GRU, which is Russian military intelligence, and they ran the hack and leak operation that targeted the DNC and the Clinton campaign. Then, of course, those emails came out. They were pushed out through WikiLeaks and through reporters, and those were also used to really try to control the narrative and control the press cycle at key points during the presidential election. Anytime they wanted to change the subject, they could drop a new tranche of emails. And so we saw this social influence campaign and then this media kind of manipulation narrative campaign, and then those two things kind of happened concurrently. So that's 2016. When we think about where we are today, back in 2016, the platforms weren't really looking for these things. So Facebook, Twitter, YouTube were all kind of blindsided by them. But what we have gotten to today, after a series of 2 years of tech hearings and 4 years of investigations, is really a sense that these campaigns are going to continue to happen. The adversaries are going to continue to try. And the platforms, however, have gotten a lot better at finding them. So there is a much more focused kind of group of researchers that work together to try to think about how we're going to identify these operations and stop them early before they can have an impact. Mm-hmm. So the foreign risk is in some ways diminished or reduced compared to where it was in 2016 when nobody was looking. But there are, of course, new challenges as adversaries evolve and as more and more different groups of people, not just Russia, realize that they can run these kinds of campaigns.
Yeah, you know, Renee, it's interesting you say that, because in 2016 we dug into the data and we looked and you saw that there were people from other countries, these troll farms, etc., who were creating fake accounts for legitimate groups in the U.S., and in some cases getting more followers for the illegitimate groups, sometimes double or triple the followers, than the legitimate group they were supposed to be. So they would say they're Black Lives Matter, or you were part of any you can name any group at all of any political persuasion or any sort of interest, and they were taking over these accounts, and people actually thought they were signing up to be part of that group, but it wasn't that type of group at all. It was a sort of a manipulation campaign. Now you're hearing from places like Facebook. First of all, Twitter says we won't do any political ads, so it's just not even an issue. And Facebook is saying, well, we're moving all these accounts. And what I'm hearing from you is that they're doing a pretty good job at that, but that kind of thing won't be present coming up in the next election?
Well, the tactics have changed. So in 2015, we did see the Internet Research Agency run a whole bunch of Facebook ads. They ran about 3,800 Facebook ads over a period of a couple of years. And what they were doing with it was they were doing what you're describing. They're using it to acquire audiences to their pages. But one of the things that we saw at Stanford recently, I think in late August of last year, was a Ukrainian ring, not run by the government of Ukraine, not in any way a state-run operation, but just some spammers who decided that it would be advantageous to target Trump supporters. We saw the same thing with a group run out of Kosovo. They decided that they would run Blue Lives Matter content to target Americans who had families who were police officers. And the point of it was not to interfere in an election or to do something, directly related to politics. It was actually to make people click on their posts so that they would go to their website and they could be served ads. So it was kind of a financially motivated spam operation. Mm-hmm. And these pages had 300,000 people or so following them, and they hadn't run a single ad. So it's very interesting. You no longer really need to run ads. If you find the right groups, you push your content into those groups, then running ads is not a necessity. So as Facebook has made it harder to run ads in an unverified way, now you see domestic entities running ads, but fewer and fewer foreign influence operations necessarily need to rely on ads as their way of reaching an American audience.
You know, I find it fascinating that you're joining us today, and just by happenstance, there's this huge announcement about that Equifax breach. Now, that is more a data breach, people's financial and personal data being breached. Nearly 150 million Americans, by the way, is part of that breach. But now today, the charges came down. Four members of the Chinese military are behind this kind of intrusion into our private information. You do see that these kinds of campaigns are out there and highly sophisticated and, I guess, highly successful.
It is possible. I mean, hacking operations have been around for a very long time, actually longer than social influence operations, because social influence operations on the big tech platforms, maybe I should say. There's always been this kind of commitment of states or economically motivated bad actors to try to manipulate people in some way. There was also a hack of the federal government employee records that I believe was attributed to China a few years back. So there's a long history of bad actors trying to take American, take data from other countries. So
our guest is Renee DiResta, head of policy for the nonprofit Data for Democracy. She's with the Stanford University Internet Observatory, and you also co-wrote the Senate Intel report on disinformation after the last presidential election. What will you be looking for this time around to see where things are popping up in terms of these kinds of campaigns? What is, do you think, the next frontier, or where will your eyes be?
So at Stanford, we look globally. We're not only looking at the U.S. So while U.S. 2020 is a focus, one of the ways that we find ways that adversaries are evolving is we look at what they're doing in experimental other countries, particularly because not many people are looking in other countries. So we've put out some work recently on how Russia is interfering in African elections in 8 different countries in Africa. And what they're doing there is, instead of creating their own fake pages, they're actually hiring locals to create and run the pages for them. So this makes it a lot harder to trace that idea of what's an authentic page run by an authentic person versus, what's kind of a front or a puppet or a malign entity that is backed by a foreign government, even if it looks like on paper it's being run by a real citizen. So there's interesting things that we're seeing with that. We just did some work on China and Taiwan. So in the Taiwan recently had an election on January 20th, and one of the things that we saw there was Facebook did a takedown of a few dozen pages that it attributed not to outside Chinese state activity, but rather to kind of domestic shenanigans by real citizens of Taiwan who were using manipulative methods like kind of spammy distribution tactics and fake accounts to try to make their candidate support seem greater than it was. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's not being run by anyone outside. It's being run by domestic activists who have realized that this is an effective way to get a message out, to kind of dominate the share of voice, the percentage of the conversation that a particular candidate is having. And that's a really tough line. Like, where is legitimate activism end and manipulative behavior begin when it's run by a person who is a citizen of that country who has the right to express themselves?
Yeah, and it'll be an issue here as well. How much latitude even the campaigns and the people who want a certain candidate to succeed here in the U.S.? I mean, what kinds of rules and restrictions can you put on those, on people like that, too? If you take the foreign interference out of it, just the people who are pushing for their own candidate, and how that can be, how people can look at that sort of thing as well. I guess there are rules now on some of these Facebook and some of the social media platforms to deal with that.
They're getting there. I mean, I think one of the key challenges is it becomes politicized. So if one particular candidate's groups come down, as we saw in Taiwan, the supporters of that candidate will allege that they're being censored, right? That the platforms have done something unfair, and that turns into a very interesting dynamic that Facebook is out to get our candidate, and so that is a thing that I think is a risk that all of the platforms share. Whenever Twitter takes down a series of accounts that it's deemed to be false or manipulative, if they're kind of more widely distributed among one political party, even in the U.S., that political party comes out and, complains
that.
And sees it as censorship. And that's because a lot of it is, again, there's this question that the norms aren't really there yet. The laws definitely aren't. We're not going to see laws in the United States around what you can say on social media, particularly because, this is a free expression issue. So the platforms are really using their terms of service to try to decide what constitutes manipulative distribution or manipulative accounts, meaning the account isn't what it seems to be. And that's really so rather than getting into the substance of the content, mm-hmm. they're really looking more at the behavior and the authenticity of the actor.
All right. It's an interesting world. Thanks for breaking down some of it for us, Renee. It's something I'm sure we will hear more about in these months leading up to the election. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Renee DeResta.
Thank you.
She's the head of policy of the nonprofit Data for Democracy. She's at Stanford and, again, co-wrote that Senate Intel report on disinformation. Trending topics are next. Did you hear what Joe Biden called a college student? Uh-oh, his latest gaffe. Plus, the last Illinois Kmart closes its doors and what the Oscars got wrong coming up in Trending Topics. Trending Topics. It's time to see what people are sharing and caring about. Jisuki is stepping into the studio. Lauren Lapka is stepping into the studio as well. Did you guys watch the Oscars?
Of course.
Yes.
Yes, I did too. I had to drag my husband to watch it. He doesn't love it. But the Oscars were the lowest rating of all time.
Oh, no. I guess I'm not too surprised. I feel like it just keeps getting lower and lower every year.
Yes, I do. I do. But this one was worth watching because they made it entertaining and it wasn't all that preachy either. It was really about entertainment.
I felt for the most really humorous throughout. I love the little comedy bits that all the presenters did.
Yes. Presenters were great, And the music, so good.
It was like almost rivaling the Grammys this year in terms of the musical performances, which is hard for me to say. That's my favorite award show because I feel like they put on such a show because it's their peers, so they want to show their best.
Grammys are the best for performances.
I loved the Frozen one right off the bat with all the different languages being sung by the different, I'm guessing, voice actors.
Yes, from around the world.
Yeah. Oh, that was amazing.
Oh, that just tore it.
We needed that.
I needed that moment. Yeah. I did.
I cried. I needed a good cry during Billie Eilish's yesterday.
I mean, uber talented, that woman, that young woman. She is so amazing. She really is. Did you guys see the Chicagoan who won an Oscar last night for Best Animated Short?
Yeah.
Hair Love.
I want to see that. I haven't seen it. I heard it's amazing.
Matthew A. Cherry, he's from the Northwest Side, grew up on Lawrence Avenue, went to Loyola Academy, played in the NFL, and this is like his take two. He's doing an animated short. He wanted people to not only see fathers doing their daughter's hair, but black hair, kind of talk about the, how normal this is, and this is what we deal with, and it's just a very sweet, sensitive cultural piece about daddies doing their daughter's hair.
Would you see the stories? What was the kid from Texas or that couldn't walk in graduation? It might not be
with
Texas.
It was Texas. And he was the guest. He was told that the dreadlocks were not allowed in school, and so he was a guest of Matthew A. Cherry at the Oscars last night.
Oh, fantastic. So that's my, when it's the winners that aren't the big categories, like shorts, animated, documentary, I love their speeches because it's usually such a surprise. They never dreamed or imagined that they would be on such a global stage.
It's hard to imagine Brad Pitt saying, I'm so surprised, but he really believing it. But when they come up there, it's like, this is a dream come true.
It's touching.
Can bring tears to your eyes. Okay, what was left out at the Oscars last night? This is trending. People were concerned and kind of like saying, Oscars, you got this one wrong. The Luke Perry was missing in the obit.
I noticed that. You know what happens when I'm... First, I'm crying throughout that entire thing. I know everybody is, but I always am shocked. Oh my goodness, he did die this year, or she did die this year. I can't believe it.
We can't believe we lost him. We lost her, and just you start thinking back to all their contributions in the world of art and entertainment, and it you know, it can be, it's very moving. But they forgot to put him in. We saw even Kobe Bryant in that reel for the obits. We saw Kirk Douglas pass away.
I thought it was smart that they put Kobe in the beginning and then they ended with Kirk because they're such big, huge, you know, folks that
it was so recent.
How would they space them out, you know? So
yeah, it was a good call. Natalie Portman, Oscar's cape, did you see this? It paid tribute to the snubbed female director. So she was very elegant and you wouldn't have known it, but if you zoom in on her cape and her
names
dress,
were embroidered.
The female directors who were nominated, who they forgot to nominate, in her opinion, for Oscars this year.
Did you hear, though, there was more controversy about that? Then people said, you might be a hypocrite because she owns her own production company. And in her own production company, and who knows, there's two sides to every story. But they were saying she only has one female director that was used by the production company. So look that up. I don't know that I have all the facts
that wouldn't
on
that, fill a gown or a cape, just one female director.
People were saying, you're being a hypocrite because you're saying this, but yet your production company doesn't have a ton of women directors.
A hypocrite in Hollywood? That doesn't exist.
What?
Gee, I've never seen this before. All right, let's talk politics, from Hollywood to politics. Joe Biden, did you see he had another gaffe on the campaign trail? What I think you'd call a gaffe fairly, and we have a little audio, and you can decide if you would call this a gaffe. He was talking to a college student in a town hall yesterday, and this is what he said.
So you're arguably the candidate with the greatest advantage in this race. You've been the vice president. You weren't burdened down by the impeachment trials. So, in the participation. So how do you explain the performance in Iowa, and why should the voters believe that you can win the national election?
It's a good question. Number one, I was a Democratic caucus. You ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a line dog faced pony soldier. You said you were, but now you got to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you.
So that was the moment. She's a 21-year-old economics student at Mercer, and people thought, well, that's going over the top a little bit to call her a lion dog faced pony. How does he know she hasn't been to an Iowa caucus? First of all, where do you get that term anyway? That's so Biden-esque.
But was he trying to do it in a playful, charming way?
Was.
I think he just missed the mark there because that's a lot of derogatory.
Yeah, the length of the insult made it kind of seem a lot more serious.
Like if he had just said, you little liar, and left it at that, that might have been better. But the whole thing was quite colorful.
Yeah,
very descriptive.
Very descriptive, and kind of people thought, what is he saying there? Which has been something people have said for a while now as on the campaign trail, but maybe it was playful. Maybe he meant nothing by it.
It's like you're the uncle and or grandpa. You just aren't quite sure what he's going to say.
But he's running for president. He has to figure that stuff out.
There's a lot of folks that you never know what they're going to say.
Very true. Mike Bloomberg, he's a billionaire. We kind of know what he has to say so far. Did you see this, though? This is trending. He is paying influencers to make him seem more cool. This is what's happening. The Bloomberg campaign has quietly begun a campaign on Tribe, and this is a content marketplace. I'm not familiar with Tribe, but that connects social media influencers with the brands that want to advertise to their followers. So I guess this is where influencers make a lot of money by connecting themselves with the things and products. But for $150, the Bloomberg campaign will pitch micro influencers if you have 1,000 to 100,000 followers. And you just have to create content that says, tell us why Mike Bloomberg is the electable candidate who can rise above the fray, work across the aisle, so all Americans feel heard and respected.
He really is just paying
He's got enough money to do
it. Wazoo for this. I loved SNL over the weekend because they had the Democratic debate and the sponsorship by Bloomberg. They're like, don't like any of these candidates.
You know, I think, Jazz, we might have a little bit of SNL over the weekend because I didn't see all of the Democratic debates. A lot of people didn't. It was Friday night, right?
Yeah.
And so what I like to do is just watch SNL later. And this is a little bit of it.
Vice President Biden, let's start with you. Are you at all concerned about your poor performance in Iowa?
Well, you know, I'll be honest. Losing to Iowa was a real kick in the nuts, all right? But I am not worried at all because, you know, by the time we get to South Kakalaki, Joe Biden's going to do what Joe Biden does best. Creep up from behind. Just when you think your lead is safe, my numbers are going to sneak up and surprise you with a nice, sweet kiss on the neck.
Mayor Pete, you initially claimed victory in Iowa, and then Senator Sanders claimed victory a few days later, leading to some major infighting. Who do you think really won?
Donald Trump.
I mean out of the Democrats.
I guess me.
I still can't believe all this mess happened in Iowa.
But that was Larry David reprising his role as Bernie Sanders. He's so good. He's so
perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, he talked about how it's about going to the butcher. It should be. You shouldn't use apps. We don't need apps. What is technology for? Just go to the butcher and get your number and vote or something. There was some sort of thing that he said there that was very funny. So go. That's available online if you want to check it out. Finally here, Backstreet Boys extend their world tour, including a stop in Chicago, and Janet Jackson coming back to the United Center as well. Two concerts with high interest coming here.
I'd have to go to one of those.
I know. Which one would you go to,
Lauren? Definitely Backstreet Boys.
I'll see you there. All right, that's going to do it for Trending Topics for us. We're going to check in with Ro Khan, see what's coming up on his show at 3, and also see what's going on in the newsroom from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour. We were talking in Trending Topics about Joe Biden and his comments with a college student or exchange during that town hall yesterday when he called the 21-year-old economics student from Mercer University, Madison Moore is her name. He called her a lying dog-faced pony soldier. And I must admit, when I read the story at first, I thought, well, that seems really strange. But when we just heard the audio there, I'm going to agree with, I think G might have said this, that it did seem a little more playful than the way it was kind of put out there. And 262, come on, I'm not a Biden guy, but that's just an older guy being a goof. No need to analyze. Look what our president says every day. So I hear you there. That it did seem a lot more playful than it just shows you. Just shows you. You read these headlines and you see something, but that one, it just seemed like a strange thing to say. I think it just struck everybody that way. Also, 309. Yay, Yang Gang, $1,000 a month, free money. I'm going to the boats and blow it all in 2 hours. I don't know if that's what Yang has intention, but he's certainly staying in there. Yang is still in it, and that is part of his platform, the $1,000 a month, universal income for every man, woman, and child, no matter rich, no poor, whatever. That's part of his vision. So we'll see what happens with politics as they move on to New Hampshire. Have they gotten Iowa sorted out yet? I really don't. Kim Gordon, do you know, has Iowa already been determined, or are they still sort of sorting things out? Last I heard, Buttigieg had won most of the delegates and Biden was in second Buttigieg had won most of the delegates and Bernie Sanders was in second with the second most delegates, and then Biden, I think, was fourth or something like that.
So, Anna, we're just hearing now that Buttigieg and Sanders are asking for a re-canvass. So we will bring you all the details of that. It's just breaking now. So we'll find out soon what they plan to do. But it looks like both of those camps, at least, are asking for re-canvass. We haven't heard from the others yet.
Thank you, Kim. Tune in for the news in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN.